Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
The reason the talk garnered some enthusiasm was it wasn't because of my sparkling presentation, but because it's a wonderful teaching. It goes back to the Buddha. It's quite simple and elegant, and it really ties in a lot of our meditation practice in a very simple way, in a way that you can bring with you into meditation practice and experience for yourself. So the seven factors of awakening, that should tell you that it's an important teaching. It's given a very exalted name. Unfortunately, it tends to be ignored. People don't look at it a lot in meditation practice. In fact, there's a monk in Malaysia who's been writing a book on meditation, and he is somewhat staking out. He's a great believer in going back to the Buddha, which is my orientation, also Bhante's orientation. Find out what the Buddha taught, because a lot of those teachings have been neglected in modern presentations of meditation. And he's writing this book on meditation, and he sent me a kind of an advanced copy, hoping to get some review for it. And I read through it, and the main comment I had, you said, you don't have the seven factors of awakening in here. I said, you know, the seven factors of awakening basically make your point. And he said, oh, yeah, you're right. So we tend not to look at it very closely. One of the developments in Theravada meditation, one of the things that make people want to go back to the Buddha, is in Theravada we normally think of meditation as two types of meditation. We call it vipassana and samatha. How many people know those terms? So if you just look at the teaching of the seven factors of awakening, you see, no, they're both the same thing. They're both just different stages of the same practice. So seven factors of awakening is actually a causal chain. It is a progression of mental factors that play out during our meditation. So hopefully by the end of this talk, you'll be able to remember all seven of them. The first one is mindfulness. Okay, you hear a lot about mindfulness in meditation. I'll go through the seven, and then I'll go back and explain each one in a little more detail. The second is investigation of phenomena. This is the main activity that we do in Buddhist meditation, investigation of phenomena. The third one is energy. We bring energy to this investigation. The fourth one is an emotional or affective experience, and that is delight or joy. It's sometimes translated as rapture. It's just feeling of kind of excitement and well-being. The fourth one, the fifth one is calm. So after the rapture, you experience a sense of calm. The sixth one is concentration. So it's samadhi in Pali. And then finally, the seventh one is equanimity. So you can experience in a meditation session, you can actually experience all seven. And successful meditation for the Buddha is to be able to line these the seven up. Okay, so mindfulness. Mindfulness for the Buddha, mindfulness really means memory. The word sati means memory. And it's not how we normally understand mindfulness in the modern day. Mindfulness, actually, how we understand it, most meditation teachers understand it, it actually kind of stands for the whole chain of all seven factors of dependent co-arising. For the Buddha, mindfulness is something more specific. The word sati means memory. And so mindfulness, actually, the word mindfulness is not a bad translation, but it's basically keeping something in mind. So what are we keeping in mind in our meditation practice? Well, actually, we have a wide variety of choices, but as we sit down to meditate, we want to keep something in mind. So when you learn to meditate, typically, at the beginning, you learn mindfulness of breath. So you keep the breath in mind. What you keep in mind is not only the breath itself, but also certain things to look for. So Bhante was teaching mindfulness of breathing this morning, and we he was explaining when I entered the room that, you know, you pay attention to each breath. You notice the length of the breath. The breaths will vary in length. There's kind of a little space between breaths. This is what you're being mindful of, keeping qualities of the breath in mind. How you engage with the breath is your investigation. So this is the second quality. So the mindfulness is to remember what to do and remember what background information to bring. The investigation is the main activity. We're looking at the breath. You look at the breath, you try to understand it. Not intellectually, but, you know, get a real sense, experience the breath completely. This is to investigate the breath. So this kind of defines what it is we do with meditation. As you go further into meditation, you find that there are things besides the breath that you can keep in mind and investigate. And in fact, in advanced stages, you want to be able to investigate things like suffering and craving and the relationship of suffering and craving. And you can do this in your meditation practice. You might want to investigate the nature of consciousness or attachments or the sense of self. There are different things that we can investigate. The breath is a good starting point because it's very simple. And it's actually very powerful, the meditation that you can develop simply around the breath. So mindfulness and investigation of phenomena. Phenomena means experiences, things that you can experience directly. So the third factor is energy. Meditation always takes a certain amount of energy. Most of that energy is just involved in keeping you from being distracted. So I sit down and decide I'm going to investigate the breath, but immediately I'm thinking of, you know, a TV program I saw last week, or I'm wondering what's for lunch, or you know, what I'm going to do at work on Monday, or any number of things that can distract us. So that energy is necessary. It keeps us on track, and we bring a lot of diligence into our investigation. Hopefully, to look, we don't. You can be non-distracted, but also just kind of be zoning out. So we don't. We want the energy to be there. Meditation is a very active process. Okay, the third one is this feeling of delight. So this will generally arise, and it arises for psychological reasons. you know, it, when we are engaged with energy, when the mind is well focused on its task, it's delightful. We feel good. So what we generally will experience is this feeling of delight, joy. It's kind of delight is different from happiness, in that it has a little bit of excitement in it. It's kind of an excited state of well-being, whereas happiness itself is more contented. It's much stiller. It's important to distinguish these two in your meditation practice as you gain some facility, because that sense of happiness will also arise. It's not mentioned as a factor in the seven factors of awakening, but actually it does arise in some of the texts that deal with the same space will mention that the happiness will arise. All of these things are subject to control, so we can bring our energy. We can become more or less mindful. We can be more or less engaged in the process of investigation. We can have more or less energy, and we can also experience more or less joy or delight in our meditation practice. In fact, the Buddha provides some instructions for basically increasing the amount of delight we experience in our meditation, which I won't get into today, but maybe in one of these weeks we can talk about these. So we can actually cultivate this sense of delight in our meditation. That sense of delight is actually something very important in meditation. The Buddha talks about this specifically. He said that our meditation should actually be something that's joyful. Apparently, at the time of the Buddha, the norm, the way of thinking was about meditation or any kind of spiritual practice was kind of no pain, no gain. It's not supposed to be fun. it's not supposed to be enjoyable. And that, especially for these kind of morbid ascetics, which the Buddha, before he became the Buddha, practiced according to their teachings for a time. You can see what he looked like in actually a picture in the corner there, how he was starving himself to death in the corner on the left, just to the left of the corner. When he practiced this way, so this was no pain, no gain, and he realized that meditation can actually be something that is quite pleasant, and quite joyful. And he realized this by remembering when he was a child, spontaneously going into a state of concentration or jhana, and how pleasant that was, how joyful it was. And so the Buddha emphasizes this. This is one of the ways that meditation inspires us, because it helps us access these states of delight, happiness, well-being that are free from any kind of anxiety. They're kind of super mundane states. They're not like the worldly pleasures that we have by engaging in sensual pursuits. And so it can be quite inspiring for our meditation to experience these and to cultivate these in meditation. What follows the sense of delight is a sense of calm. So we have four factors that precede the calm. The first is mindfulness. I'll just repeat these again. See if you can remember them before I state them. Mindfulness, the investigation, the energy, and the delight. So the three after mindfulness are actually energetic states. The investigation is an activity that we engage in the energy we bring into, so that's energetic, and then the delight itself is kind of an energetic state. It's kind of an excited feeling. But because these result in a sense of well-being, the mind in general begins to go into a state of calm, even though we can continue the investigation and bring a certain amount of energy. As the mind becomes calmer, we actually need less energy to do the investigation, and we're less likely to be distracted. So calm is the fifth factor of awakening. And calm naturally leads to concentration. So concentration is really meditation per se. It is described as samadhi. Also, the word jhana is used a lot. A lot of you will have heard the word jhana. It's really the same thing. And so it is a profound state of relaxing of the mind. But the mind is settled into the task of investigation. The investigation continues in concentration. Now, concentration will go through different stages, and the stages are called jhana. So samadhi is the word the Buddha used to describe the concentration as a whole. But jhana, which is a word that really just means meditation or contemplation prior to the Buddha, he talks about the four jhanas, stages of deeper and deeper concentration. And so the final factor of awakening after concentration is equanimity. Equanimity is a state of emotional quiescence, where you're sitting there with no preferences. You don't feel pleasure, pain. And it's associated particularly strongly with the fourth jhana, which is the deepest state of concentration. So these are the seven factors of awakening. So again, let's see if you can remember them all. What's the first one?
Mindfulness.
Investigation.
Energy.
Delight.
Calm.
Concentration.
Equanimity.
Good. Remember them all. So one of the things in the later Theravada tradition, we tend to specialize meditation a bit and talk about two kinds of meditation. So you will hear this distinction made between vipassana and samatha meditation. And the claim is often made that these are inconsistent. You have to choose which one to do. Now, vipassana means insight. It means seeing into. So it is associated with process of investigation. So it's often called mindfulness meditation. So vipassana really it kind of focuses on the early stages, the early factors of awakening. And then samatha meditation is usually, it's a stillness meditation, stilling the mind. So it would seem to be focused on the later stages of factors of awakening. But the factors of awakening tell you it's all the same process. It's not two kinds of meditation. We begin with mindfulness and investigation, and this naturally leads to concentration, to very still states of mind. However, the concentration is not so still that investigation cannot happen in these states of concentration. Now, in many forms of yoga meditation, the emphasis is not so much on investigation as on getting the mind still. But still, They rely on a process of investigation, usually following the breath. So you follow the breath, and if you follow the breath, you can get the mind really, really still. So anyway, often we talk about two different kinds of meditation, but for the Buddha, he did not distinguish these. For the Buddha, the point is not to still the mind to such an extent that you can shut the mind down. This is kind of the ultimate goal in as I understand most forms of Hindu meditation, is to really shut the mind down, just, you know, make it stop. And it can be quite a profound experience to stop the breath. But what happens if you stop the mind is, first of all, you don't have no faculty, nothing to investigate, because the mind is stopped. And you don't have the faculty to investigate it in any case, because the mind is stopped. So the idea is the concentration that we aim for in Buddhist meditation is much more subtle than that. It is not a matter of shutting down the mind. It is a matter of bringing the mind to a very, very still state in which the investigation can still occur. So there's a wonderful passage that the Buddha provides that describes the concentrated mind. He said that he picture a mountain lake. And the lake, you know, if the wind is blowing or a lot of people are playing in the lake, you know, people may be water skiing or something in motorboats. And if there's a lot of activity in the lake, the water of the lake is very, very choppy. And you look in the water and you can't see anything. It's choppy water. But if the lake becomes very, very, very still, when you look in the lake, what you see, you can see everything. You can see all the way down to the bottom of the lake. You can see every little pebble. You can see the fish swimming by. And this is what we want to do with our mind. We're investigating, and what we're investigating is not only the breath, but our own mind, what's going on in our mind. And so that stillness allows us to see everything that's going on in very vivid detail. And so this is the purpose of samadhi or concentration, is to allow us to perfect the process of investigation, to see everything very clearly. So what's the result of this? The result is insight. The result is that we gain insight into the workings of our own mind. When we gain insight into the workings of our own mind, we see the faults of our own mind. We see how our own mind is really fabricating what we think is reality, and then convincing itself that this is really real. Fabricating in it in a very unskillful way, one that is often quite deluded. We act out these delusions in our behavior. So as a process of purifying the mind, we need to understand our own mind, and this is at the center of the Buddhist program of spiritual development, is to understand our own minds, and meditation is part of this process, especially at the later stages of spiritual development. So insight is the result. Basically, the Buddha describes it as knowledge and vision of things as they really are. We learn to see things as they really are, through our investigation and through bringing the calmness into our mind, into having a utterly undistracted mind that just sees things very clearly. So this is basically what the seven factors of awakening describe for us.